National Radio Club.
Howdy, Xers. Welcome to the final Market Scope. This month, we're just going to put on a simple air check and let it all play out. Let's go back to September 24th, 1971, and I'll see you back here in a few minutes.
This is Chris Kay, Syracuse's new morning ray of hope. Join me 6 to 10 weekdays at the Big 15.
She used to make socks years ago, had one big hit. Now, that's the biggest one that they ever had. Wah, wah, Tussie, at $1 million weekend. This is Dale Darling, guest starring at WOLF on a Jim Sims show. And this is Bill Withers.
Ain't no sunshine when she's gone.
For music. W-O-L-A
1964. So he sounded like a dentist song. Aaron's expecting the guy to say, all right, stick out your tongue and say, ah. And he did, didn't he? 327 with Dale Darwin for Jim Sims. Not a $1 million weekend animals, and I'm crying.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to The $1 Million Weekend.
W-O-L-A Syracuse.
3:30 on the Jim Sims Show with Dale Darwin. Hey! Hi, little girl. Want to go for a ride? Take a ride. Combination of CC Rider and Jenny, won't you come along with me? That's in the all-time top 300 of WOLF, and it's Mitch Ryder back when he was with his Detroit Wheels. He was always a big wheel anyway. Dale Darwin at WOLF on the Jim Sims Show. It's 3:32. Penn Optical Vision Centers announces the new soft contact lens. Revolutionary contact lens comfort, and it's approved by the FDA and available at Penn Optical downtown and in Liverpool.
You know, going out at night is like working a crossword puzzle. You've got to come...
Weather.
Mostly sunny and cool this afternoon with a high near 65, a low of about 45 tonight. Airport weather partly sunny, operations at normal, and in Syracuse at 61. Literacy Volunteers is an organization that provides free private lessons for those with reading difficulties. Funny that I should blow that one, isn't it? The Big 15 urges you to call 478-2171 for more information. WOLF Hip Bound with Dawn, featuring Tony Orlando. And what are you doing Sunday? Woo! Stop it. Of your business. What are you doing Sunday? Because, gee, I want to marry you. He's a little forward. He's also hit by Dawn. And what are you doing Sunday? Dale Darwin, guest starring for Jim Sims at WOLF's 336.
If he kissed you. W-O-L-F.
1962. I've always had a soft spot in my heart for yodelers. I remember Frank Iford.
I remember you.
For 4 o'clock, this is Jerry Morgan, WOLF 2020 News. Governor Rockefeller is calling for major reforms in the state's prison system. Rocky's request comes as a direct result of the Attica prison uprisings.
Rated R, under 17, not admitted without parent.
Now in its sixth big week at Carol's Mini One.
Syracuse weather ahead of more music and Dale Darwin for Jim Sims. Mostly sunny and cool today with a high of 64. Fair and cool tonight with a low of 45. Airport weather partly sunny. Operations normal. It's 62 at the Big 15. This is Jerry Morgan, 2020 News.
W-O-L-A.
Dale Darwin on the Jim Sims Show on $1 Million Weekend, W-O-L-F. This is Joan Baez.
Virgil Kane is my name, and I drove on the band.
For music, W-O-L-F.
Dale Darwin here on the Jim Sims Show on $1 Million Weekend. 351 with a guess who. I still haven't guessed the answer. I never did figure it out.
Why haven't I?
Why Haven't I is not the title of the song. No Time is the title of the song. We're supposed to get the time there.
No time left for you.
On my way to better things.
You ask, when I'm going to get tired of you? My answer is, you know, I hadn't thought of it till just now when you mentioned it. You should have kept your mouth shut, dude. 354 on the Jim Sims Show with Dale Darwin at WOLF. This is the fifth dimension.
You ask me if...
Agent 00 Soul is here on $1 Million Weekend. Solid Gold from 64. Edwin Starr.
I dig rock and roll.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Dale Dorman.
W-O-L-A, Syracuse.
4 o'clock on $1 million weekend. The Jim Sims Show with the Supremes, and you keep me hanging.
Let me free, why don't you say?
Get out of my life. Well, let me sleep at night. You just keep me hanging on. That's for everybody who owns any scotch tape in the neighborhood.
So keep me hanging on.
That goes back to the old I'm sticking with you songs. Listen here, Million Dollar Weekend going on. Jim Sims Show, actually, and Dale Dorman is here. That's I on WOLF, naturally. 403. Penn Optical Vision Centers announces a new soft contact lens. Revolutionary contact lens comfort and approved by the FDA. And it's also available at Penn Optical downtown and in Liverpool.
New from Anheuser-Busch.
Budweiser. W-O-L-A weather.
Mostly sunny and cool this afternoon with a high near 65 and low tonight around 45. Airport weather, partly sunny, operations normal. In Syracuse, it's really nice in 61. The Taunton Fire Department's first Sunday of the month breakfast will be held October 3rd. The Big 15 reminds that they'll be serving from 8 a.m. until 1 p.m. W-O-L-F, hitbound. Life is a carnival. Oh, it's a million laughs. Listen, this is the band. Little cotton candy, candy apples, and the streets are paved with chocolates. Another wonderful thing. That's by the band, Hitbound, at WOLF on a Jim Sims Show with Dale Dorman. It's 4:08.
Charlie, this is the last time.
Vanity Fair with the real thing for Coke.
Get the point on WOLF and win a super concert for the school of your choice. Beginning Monday morning on the Chris Kay Show, we'll ask questions on the air. Each question is worth 50, 100, or 150 points for the high school of your choice. As the points build, your school is closer to the live concert with Jam Factory, The Living End, or Kelly and Company. Get the point beginning Monday at the Big 15.
WOLF.
Somewhere together. Well, you see, sort of had in that mind. Louie, Louie. That's the King's Band, Solid Gold on $1 million weekend. Dale Dorman for Jim Sims at WOLF 413.
Week at Carol's Cinema Eat.
I woke up in love this morning with a tooth fairy. I was in love with my pillow. I'm a little strange, you know.
Last night, I turned off the lights, lay down and thought about you.
I think every time I played a Partridge Family record that I'd have to line the place with newspapers just in case. Then I found out they're a chain group with real live human people, and I need to do that after all. But I always was curious what I could do with a newspaper after reading the Sunday one. Anyway, that's the Partridge Family. Woke up in love this morning. Dale Dorman for Jim Sims at WOLF. It's 4:17.
It's at 4406 West Genesee, where you'll find Pair 3, Tuesday through Sunday, the answer to your nightlife puzzles.
1966. I remember this song a lot. I used to play it, in fact. Kim Rose. Hey, Joe.
Hey, Joe.
Hey, Joe. That's Kim Rose. Ain't he cute? It's carrying a rose between his teeth, dancing a tarantula or a tarantella. One of those is right. That's it. 422 WOLF, the Jim Sims Show with Dale Dorman.
When you're down under...
Tickets are now on sale at the box office and the SU bookstore.
I like this song because it sounds like a bunch of, I don't know what it sounds like. I don't think I dare say. Actually, it's a great song. It's Springwell. And it's for you at WOLF. I get the feeling they're singing, Joe. You didn't. Oh, well, that's a drag. Springwell. I did that first thing in the morning. Spring right out of bed. Listen, if you only knew. And the song is this for you. That's why I said that other stuff on the end. I'm Dale Dorman for Jim Sims at WOLF. Hi, folks. 425.
Tonight at the Place for Teens, in person, on stage, it's the Brooklyn Bridge. Brutal Muppet and Bear Road in North Syracuse.
Tomorrow night, at the Place, for over 18s, it's another free jam session.
W-O-L-A.
30 years of the DX Audio Service. You know, it seems like it was just only a few months ago, being in Fred's basement in Westland, Michigan, starting to put this whole crazy thing together. And for those 30 years, it should be obvious to everyone that Fred did the lion's share of the work, month after month, unpaid, because he loved radio and audio, and the listeners, and the sighted and unsighted folks who sought out this entertainment and information. Well, it had to come to an end at some point, and as we all get older and approach retirement, it was decided to pass it along or pull the plug at 30. And I sincerely hope I've provided some good moments for each and every one of you, and I sincerely thank each and every one of you, either contributor or subscriber, for your 30 years of help and support. And I kind of feel as if I made some friends out there via the miles of cassette tape and CD tracks that we produced here. And I look forward to still meeting all you guys someday, at some point. From the wilds of Harpster, Ohio, Phil Wayne here. What is it they say? 73s and good DX.
The Polish-American Polka Party on WSRO with Ernie Morrow and Ted Kowinski.
The DX Audio Service Musings from Members.
This is John Wesley Smith from Hallsville, Missouri. It appears that 810 WHB in Kansas City is operating on reduced power as of late February, and it's been that way for at least a week or so. They don't come in to my location as well as they normally do during the daytime, but they're actually coming in at night when they normally don't. And I was on the other side of the state on February 20th in the St. Louis area for a few hours, and 590 is still off the air. And there is now a new LPFM at 99.5, calling itself Praise 99.5, doing a black gospel format. Kind of interesting. There's black gospel in two places on AM at 690 and 1600. And I know that the DX Audio Service has been a labor of love from all of those involved. And so thank you to everybody that's been putting out such a great magazine. And I'm certainly going to miss it if it indeed goes away after April. Question, though, if for some reason the DX Audio Service is resurrected, will those of us who are current subscribers be notified, or will there be some mechanism for getting the word out?
Hi, DX Audio Service members. This is Skip Dabbelstein calling in from Tucson, Arizona. I just wanted to say that I've totally enjoyed being a member of the National Radio Club since 1959 and a subscriber to the DX Audio Service since 1989. I just want to take this opportunity to thank all of the editors and contributors to DXAS over the years, including John Bowker, Jerry Starr, Jim Snowbarger, Bill Hale, Phil Wayne, Mark Durenberger, and especially Fred Bobe. Great job, guys. Your service and dedication are most appreciated. Good luck and Godspeed, my friends.
Hi. This is Mike in Aventura, Florida. Thank you.
This is Bob Antonick in Clifton, New Jersey, and I'd like to congratulate Fred Vobey on 30 great years of the DX Audio Service. In my 15 years in the National Radio Club, it's been a must-listen every month. My favorite feature was in the May 2003 issue when Mark Durenberger demonstrated reception with a beverage in the desert. Logging WBZ and WQEW High Noon was incredible. I hope the DX Audio Service can continue in some way, shape, or form. If not a full-length program, maybe segments like AM Switch or Market Scope could be available as single features on EDXN. To lose it completely would be a tremendous loss for the entire DX community. Thanks for 30 years, Fred, in 73.
And to any members who called after the 20th of March, the Musings line was closed down at that time. I think the message was still on the machine, but we're unable to access them. That's our final muse. Now let's turn it over to news.
You're listening to the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service.
When the Deutsche Welle decided to close down one of their 500 kW shortwave broadcast transmitters near Munich at the end of 2012, a group containing some German radio amateurs applied for and were allocated the then available shortwave frequency of 6070 kHz in 2013. This group now have an operational 10 kW station on the frequency, using the driver stages from the old Deutsche Welle transmitter. The rest of the transmitter was built by and is run by Rainer DB8QC. The license allows transmission 24/7, but at present, most transmissions are on a weekend during daylight hours. Content is mainly provided by existing internet radio stations wanting to get their material on the air. This includes several societies that remember the days of the pirate radio pop music stations in the North Sea between England and Holland, and a lot of their music content is from the 60s and 70s. Additional content is being sought, and at only 15 euros an hour, this is not a corporate big business, rather a facility where smaller groups can afford to buy time to transmit their content. One such a group is the Deutsche Amateur Radio Club, the National Amateur Radio Society in Germany, who hope to have a weekly two-hour slot on the station from mid-March to send a DX-orientated program, probably from 6 p.m. local time on Sundays. The DARC DX magazine will be in the German language and targeted towards German-speaking listeners. Amateur radio is an international medium, however, so there are thoughts of also producing an international English hour in addition, to reach out across Europe not only to radio amateurs, but also to shortwave listeners and the general public. When I talked with another Rainer, DF2NU, who is one of the group running the station, and the president of the Munich South section of the DARC, he told me that they hope to be able to broadcast more often once sufficient content is available. However, they are already seeing other broadcasters such as Radio China moving onto the frequency in the evenings, as those stations perceive 60-70 kHz as a free frequency. Rainer told me that currently, Channel 292 has airtime bookings for 20 to 25 hours a week, mostly on weekends, at which times it runs at 10 kW output. When the station is idle, as there is no booking, the transmitter power is reduced to 1 kW and transmits an infinite music loop with no actual program. Late evenings, after 8 p.m. local, the transmitter is switched off completely in order to save energy costs. Rainer stressed that the license is for 24/7, so they can use the frequency at any time when they have content. With a current rate of EUR 15 per hour airtime, you cannot earn any money. This broadcast station is an extension of the amateur radio hobby, and the group seek to simply cover their costs. Thinking back to the very start of amateur radio, hams were allowed to transmit music, news, and entertainment programs, so it's nice to see some of this coming back onto the shortwave bands, thanks to the efforts of groups like this one. I wonder, as we see more and more broadcasters leaving the shortwave bands in favor of internet broadcasting, whether we'll see more licenses and surplus transmitters being picked up by amateur radio groups. This seems to be somewhat of a repeat of the situation when it was said, 200 meters and up is useless for broadcasting. Give it to the amateurs. We all know what then followed. Perhaps amateur radio groups around the world can put new life into released shortwave broadcast frequencies. For program information about Channel 292, simply go to their website at http://www.channel292.de. Why not give 6070 kHz AM a listen? The Channel 292 station covers a lot of Western Europe, but has also been heard in Russia and the U.S. For the DX Audio Service, I'm Chris Gay.
9 Southern California voices we will never hear again. This article was written by Jason Rosenthal and appeared in his blog, The Southern Californian, on Thursday, February 19, 2015. From Mount Wilson to the antenna atop of your roof, whether they were talking in a manic speed in between songs, introducing some cool hip music, delivering the worst possible news, or shouting down guests in an era before cable news made that a thing of their own, these were just some of the voices that made up the fabric of Southern California broadcasting. Whether on radio or television, these broadcast voices were the sound of Southern California. Okay, so the title is a little misleading. We will always hear recordings of these broadcast voices on the internet, on vinyl, tape, but we will never hear these legends of Southern California broadcasting live and in a new, original form ever again. So now, let's celebrate and remember the lives of these Southern California broadcast legends. Number 9, Robert W. Morgan.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the Robert W. Morgan Show from the Much More Music Station, AM and FM.
93K in Los Angeles.
It's 8:32 in Los Angeles. That's Gloria. That's the number one song in Los Angeles. You know it's true because it's number one on the Boss 30 from 93KHJ. Gloria by them. It's 25 minutes now before 9 from Boss Radio. You know how I feel about it. How do you feel about it? Let me know at Hollywood 1, 93-53.
What a better way to start the list of legendary Southern California voices than with the boss jock, Robert W. Morgan. As the great Dick Clark once said during a retrospective of Mr. Morgan's life, it would seem Robert W. was destined for a life in radio, as his parents' initials were AM and FM. Mr. Morgan's path to broadcast stardom began in his home state of Ohio at the Wooster College radio station. After moving from Ohio to Southern California, it took Robert W. Morgan a little time to find his groove on the Los Angeles radio dial. Having to start somewhere in Southern California, he took his one-man act up the coast to Oxnard at KACY, broadcasting from the Wagon Wheel Bowling Alley during overnight hours. After Oxnard, Mr. Morgan made some moves up and down the California coast and dial, which led him to his first major gig in Fresno and also fill-in work at KMEN in San Bernardino, otherwise known to many as KMEN 129, where, along in Fresno, he made some important contacts with the guy who would be one of the main architects in putting together a new radio station a couple of years later in Los Angeles called Boss Radio 93KHJ. In 1965, the stars aligned and many people Mr. Morgan worked with in radio around California came together to put together a new concept in Top 40 radio at a low-rated station in Los Angeles. Mr. Morgan was very highly recommended for the job as morning man, and so Robert W. made the drive down from where he was working at KEWB in San Francisco, and according to various sources, including Mr. Morgan, ran out of gas before reaching the KHJ studios for his interview. Much has been written about the coming together of Boss Radio. Robert W. Morgan became a fixture on California Morgan Radio. Whether you grew up listening to Boss Radio 93KHJ in the Morgan, or some years later listening to The Morgan Show on 710 KMPC, or you and your growing family tuned into that familiar voice on KRTH, better known as K-Earth 101 in the 1990s, Morgan's quick-witted jokes and remarks made being stuck in a sig alert a little less painful. Number 8, Wally George.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you, and welcome back. And before we go on with our program here and introduce the pervert, I want to remind you every Monday night to join me on KLAC 57 on the AM dial from 7 until 10 p.m., the Wally George Great American Radio Show. You can call me on the phone for 3 hours.
Flipping around the UHF dial in the late evening, you probably came across an ultra-liberal debating with the ultra-conservative Wally George, wearing something atop of his head that may or may not have been a hairpiece, with Wally jumping out of his chair, shouting down his guest, all the while the crowd is shouting, "Wally, Wally, Wally," broadcasting out of what looked like no more than a cable public access studio. Of course, it was not a public access studio, but rather the Anaheim studios of KDOC Channel 56, and the television program was Hot Seat, starring Wally George. Even though KDOC, over the years, attempted to have local news for Orange County, along with other local OC-based programming, KDOC could never quite pull it off. Frankly, because of this, KDOC is probably forever going to be known as the Wally George Channel. In hindsight, Hot Seat seemed like an odd mix of the Jerry Springer Show, the Colbert Report, and the Joe Pyne Show. Over-the-top political opinions, lots of shouting and yelling to get the point across, a super patriotic set with lots of staged fights and antics, with guests suddenly breaking Wally's desk or throwing pies in someone's face. Wally George was one of those things almost uniquely Southern Californian, and perhaps because of that, on many of his shows, he had several radio personalities on, such as Jim Poorman Trenton or Rick Dees. Over the years, there were attempts to syndicate Mr. George's show nationwide, but the show that was Wally George just never took off outside of Southern California. Depending on who you ask, the Wally George Show on KDOC was nothing more than an utter act, and other people say that Mr. George may have held these views, but found a way to have fun with his show while presenting those views. Whatever the case may have been, after years of trying to find footing on local television in the 1970s and appearances on AM Los Angeles with Regis Philbin on KABC-TV, Wally George finally had his own television show, and it ended up being a very memorable television program. Number 7. Hunter Hancock.
Let's go a-hunting with Hunter. Good hunting, everybody. This is Hunter Hancock, old HH, getting ready to do a little hunting around for some of the very best in rhythm and blues records, featuring principally the greatest and most popular Negro musicians, singers, entertainers in the world. You'll hear music that runs the gamut from bebop to ballads. Swing to sweet. And blues to boogie.
Though Hunter Hancock had left radio many decades before his death in 2004, he left behind many teenagers wanting these rhythm and blues records he played on his nightly KGFJ show. The music was something new, and it is believed Hunter Hancock was the first broadcast DJ in the western United States to play this new kind of music that became known as rock and roll. Perhaps because he left radio in 1968 going into the world of public relations and leading a rather quiet life, it sometimes sadly seems history has forgotten Hunter Hancock and his impact in not just broadcasting, but shaking up the L.A. music scene. Mr. Hancock brought a new form of music to the airwaves of Southern California, which was called, sometimes sadly as a pejorative, race music. The teenagers loved the music, but sadly, having a show playing nothing but rhythm and blues, Mr. Hancock received some not-so-nice telephone calls, telegrams, and letters about playing this race music their kids were listening to. In the end, the good outdid the evil, as Hunter Hancock's show became a major radio hit in the ratings and expanded to 3.5 hours, and soon Mr. Hancock hosted a series of midnight matinee shows at the Olympic Auditorium and the Orpheum Theater. Hunter Hancock was so popular at one point he had his own Friday night television show on KNXT, now KCBS-TV, in 1955, interviewing rhythm and blues artists like Fats Domino, which was a pretty big deal. In many ways, Hunter Hancock was the Ellen Freed of the West Coast, playing this exciting new music on the radio and upsetting the establishment. Like Ellen Freed, by 1962, Mr. Hancock was caught up in his own payola scandal, with authorities saying Mr. Hancock failed to report $18,000 in cash from various record promoters, but he claimed the cash was simply a gift. Mr. Hancock was given probation by the court, and the end result did not ruin his life, unlike, sadly, that of Ellen Freed. While Mr. Hancock remained at KGFJ until 1968, he did not really like the direction radio had been going in for some time, and by that, what old HH really meant was he did not like being told what to play or say. So Mr. Hancock played the records he liked at home and got a job in public relations to pay the bills. Long after introducing rhythm and blues, otherwise known as rock and roll, to Southern California radio, and putting on some big shows and moving into public relations, Mr. Hancock retired to Claremont. Number 6, B. Mitchell Reed.
Listen, Shelby, Osley Brothers, a big hit, and here's another one in the making.
Dino!
Right, yes, whatever the...
Tango! Everybody tango!
Yeah. And the monkey! The tango sounds, the Isley Brothers, best seat in front of town, WMC, it's a brand new one, baby, pick up on that great big sound, and pick up on this, here come the bride, I'll pick up the bride in your hand there, baby, no, your
A
arm,
cool,
there.
Hip cat with the fastest tongue in the West was a DJ named B. Mitchell Reed. Depending on when and where, he sometimes went by BMR, or Beamer. It was BMR who was there at the birth of two very different forms of radio riding the waves of post-war Southern California suburban teenage angst, and later becoming Southern California's broadcast voice of the Beat Generation. In the late 1950s, if you were a young kid living in a brand new suburban home in this new town called Lakewood, or maybe living in a new subdivision in the San Fernando Valley, chances are your transistor radio was set to the sounds of color radio KFWB Channel 98. The DJs had fun personalities, and the radio jingles were about as long as some of the hit songs. B. Mitchell Reed found a way to have fun with the new color radio format. Mr. Reed would return to his hometown of New York in 1963 and take on a very similar role, becoming one of the WMCA good guys. And after a couple of years, Beamer returned to L.A. and KFWB in 1965. By 1965 and 66, some big changes had been happening in music and society. And BMR, who maybe spent a little too much time in Greenwich Village, really felt and recognized these changes. The Beamer was not quite the same person he was just a few short years ago. KFWB seemed a little out of place compared to what was going on outside the studios, and on LA Radio, 93KHJ was now the king of LA Top 40. Mr. Reed, who was born Burton Mitchell Goldberg, realized music and culture was changing. Little by little, this experimentation was happening on BMR's KFWB show, and it probably wasn't a bad thing for KFWB, as they were losing a three-way Top 40 battle. However, by 1967, it was a little bizarre to hear B. Mitchell Reed rap like a Greenwich Village coffeehouse poet and then play one of those classic, long-winded, and terribly out-of-date-sounding KFWB Top 40 jingles, which led into 7 minutes of a Bob Dylan track. By way of meeting fellow disgruntled Top 40 DJ Tom Donahue at the Monterey Pop Festival, Mr. Reed discovered their common frustration with modern commercial radio. BMR heard what Mr. Donahue had going on in San Francisco. Mr. Donahue found a radio station in San Francisco that could not seem to pay their bills, and Tom came to them with an idea. This sort of music idea seemed to work, and it brought some money to the troubled station. Back in Southern California, Mr. Reed made some calls and found a little FM station that was having its own problems and little programming to air. Beamer made the switch from AM to FM over to KPPC-FM, located in the basement of the Pasadena Presbyterian Church on 106.7 on the FM dial. Radio's beat poet of the beat generation finally found a place on the dial. B. Mitchell Reed then rode the way from underground radio to corporate AOR, moving from KPPC to Metromedia's KMET, and until his death in 1983, ABC's KLOS. Number 5, Huggy Boy.
Okay, here comes that dedication I promised there from Johnny here to Ernestine Duran. I'm so proud. And
for years to come, there will be some debate on just who was the first rhythm and blues disc jockey in Southern California. Depending on who you ask, some will say it was Hunter Hancock, but ask some other people and they will say it was Huggy Boy. Both Hunter Hancock and Richard James Hug, a.k.a. Huggy Boy, had plenty of records to choose from, as many times they both did their radio shows from the Dolphins Record Store of Hollywood. Huggy Boy was a major success on L.A. radio, and in the 1950s, he had his own record label, Caddy Records. Of course, that led to Huggy Boy promoting many shows in L.A. As the 1950s gave way to the 60s, music was changing, and Huggy Boy was there to help bring some new sounds. While B. Mitchell Reed was cultivating a sound for those on the Sunset Strip, Hollywood, and the Canyons, Huggy Boy brought a sound known later as the East Side Sound to Southern California's Latino population in East Los Angeles, the San Gabriel Valley, Santa Ana, and parts of the San Fernando Valley, amid other places. Just how important was Huggy Boy's influence in the East Side Sound? Well, Huggy Boy often referred to himself as the Dick Clark of Chicanos. Huggy Boy was quite the success throughout the 1950s and into the mid-1960s, making quite a bit of money doing so. However, as broadcasting changed in the 60s and 70s, Huggy Boy had some problems staying afloat as radio gigs were becoming hard to come by. In the 1970s, things were so bad that his record label and promoting shows were not paying the bills, and so he went into a new venture to make some cash, opening a strip bar in Hollywood. In 1983, on 11:10 a.m., a legend rose again on KRLA, when with the help of another Southern California broadcast legend, Art LeBeau, Huggy Boy was back on the airwaves, and it would end up being his longest and perhaps his most memorable radio job. Huggy Boy's show on KRLA brought a lot of rare oldies to the airwaves from 1983 until KRLA's end in 1988. Huggy Boy's unique rare music collection turned on a whole new generation of listeners and record collectors. In the end, Huggy Boy, along with being the first or maybe the second to bring rhythm and blues to Southern California, brought the East Side sound to a much larger audience and gave many generations many memories. Number 4, Jerry Dunphy.
Now the latest breaking eyewitness news with Jerry Dunphy, Christine Lund, Ted, Dr. George, and the Eyewitness News team.
The desert to the sea to all of Southern California. Good evening. Here's the latest at 11.
From the desert to the sea to all of Southern California, you knew right away who was talking on television when you heard those words. Jerry Dunphy had a signature voice and look that seemed to defy age. As Dunphy flipped around the L.A. television dial, there was a timeless quality to his reporting. In the middle of many disasters that have befallen Southern California, Jerry Dunphy was that very firm but calm news anchor. Jerry Dunphy's career was filled with lots of firsts and surprises. In 1960, Dunphy drove his Volkswagen Beetle from Chicago to L.A. on the word that he will become a part of something new in television news at CBS's L.A. station. Soon after arriving at Columbia Square, Mr. Dunphy found out he would be the news anchor in something totally unheard of in television news, a one-hour evening newscast. Today, local television has many hours of local news, but back then, the typical newscast was 15 minutes. There were some newscasts that went all out for a massive 30 minutes. And something that made CBS brass a bit nervous, its L.A.-owned and operated channel wanted to do a full-hour newscast. In 1961, KNXT, as KCBS-TV was then known, which led into the CBS Evening News, which was then 15 minutes. It would not be until September 1963 that KNXT went a full hour of local news, which was called The Big News. With Jerry Dunphy at the helm, The Big News on 2 was an enormous rating success that no other local L.A. television news had ever matched up with. At its height, The Big News ran its news operation like a network news operation, opening bureaus in Orange County, San Francisco, and Sacramento, this along with Ralph Story doing special features. Given the changes in technology, local news here in Southern California or anywhere in the nation will never ever see the ratings Jerry Dunphy had at KNXT. In 1975, The Big News was still very big, and Jerry Dunphy was still very popular, and the powers that be at Columbia Square did the rational thing. They fired Mr. Dunphy. Why was he fired? He was deemed too old, according to Columbia Square and the CBS brass. In a city like L.A., being called too old can be a kiss of death, but that kiss was never given to Jerry Dunphy, because he was brought over very quickly to KABC-TV and brought his high ratings to Eyewitness News. Just as Jerry Dunphy was there for a new era of local news in 1961, in 1990 he was there for another concept in local news. In the very late 1980s, Disney had bought KHJ-TV from troubled RKO, changing the call letters to KCAL-TV and rebranding the station as California 9. It would feature 3 hours of local news in prime time, dubbed appropriately Prime 9 News. 3 hours of local news in prime time was just about as radical a concept as expanding a local newscast to 1 hour. But Jerry Dunphy fit right into the new format, and the ratings and legacy came with him. One thing people may not know about Jerry Dunphy is that he was shot and wounded during a robbery as he was on the way to the KABC-TV studios in Los Feliz. Of course, a World War II pilot was not going to let some gunfire get in his way, because within a few short months, Jerry Dunphy was back on the air. Number 3, The Real Don Steele.
The Real Don Steele, KHJ Los Angeles.
Get to me at 4:30. Woo! Yeah!
Oh, yeah!
Stop playing your game, baby! Whip it out, baby! But above 30, got to give it to me. 4:33 at KAJ, I'm the Real Don Steele, suck it.
How do you explain the Real Don Steele? Well, whether it was on Boss Radio 93 KHJ or talking manically between the Ramones and Donna Summer on the new 10Q, there was just something about this DJ. And this may seem like a cop-out answer, but you probably had to be there to understand it. And a lot of people were there and dug it. Even years after his death, the Real Don Steele is still highly remembered and highly rated as one of Southern California's best broadcasters. The Real Don Steele may have had the ethos of a fast-talking AM Top 40 radio DJ, but it was kind of like a Jackson Pollock painting. A lot of people say they can do that. A lot of people try to do that. But in the end, there's only one kind of person that can pull off that kind of art. And that person was the Real Don Steele. The Real Don Steele was one of those crazy men in radio who knew the art well. The Real Don Steele became famous at 93 KHJ, and it took somebody like Steele to tell you what was going on in the world in a 15-second talk-up. And in what soon would be called in the industry the Drake format, that was all you needed. The format worked because 93 KHJ soon crushed KFWB and KRLA. And aside from those early hipsters too cool for school, listening to B. Mitchell Reed, Boss Radio 93KHJ and The Real Don Steele seemed to hit the right notes at the right time and place. The Real Don Steele was a force on L.A. Top 40 radio until the end of the 1970s. By then, he was on KTNQ or 10Q, which really seemed to be one of the last fun Top 40 radio stations. By 1980, it seemed, The Real Don Steele was gone from the L.A. airwaves, and that was of his own doing. As Mr. Steele once told Ben Fong Torres of Rolling Stone, the type of radio he, The Real Don Steele, was doing was just not in anymore, and it seemed ridiculous to keep doing that type of radio he had been doing for so long. So in the meantime, there was acting, both on film and in voiceovers. After about 5 years off the air, The Real Don Steele came back on the air on 1110 KRLA in 1985, where he joined the likes of Huggy Boy, Dave Hull, Art LeBeau, and Humble Harv. In 1988, Steele showed up for a stint at KODJ, which was CBS's attempt to replicate the success of its New York oldie station, WCBS-FM, in L.A. In the summer of 1992, Steele found himself doing afternoons at K-Earth 101 with Robert W. Morgan doing Morgan Drive. It was the first time they were together on the same radio station since the 1970s. The Real Don Steele, born Donald Steele Revert, remained at K-Earth until his death from lung cancer in the summer of 1997. It's not Boss Radio without The Real Don Steele. Number 2, Hal Fishman.
Golden West Broadcasters, Channel 5, KTLA, Los Angeles.
Good evening. Rewards totaling $140,000 are being offered or proposed for information leading to the arrest of the Los Angeles Strangler.
When we think of the big three networks and their news departments, it seemed each network organization had that one anchor with that one voice which spoke through all the noise. If you were to combine all L.A. broadcast news media, there was one voice and one anchor that was easily heard through all the noise. That was Hal Fishman. It was sort of accidental how Hal Fishman ended up in L.A. television news. Like many broadcast journalists from his era, Fishman did not intend for a career in TV news, but rather Mr. Fishman was hoping for a career in academia. The political science major had his master's degree from UCLA and seemed to be on his way being an assistant political science professor at California State University, L.A. when KCOP-TV called. KCOP asked Hal Fishman if he would teach a college course over the summer, American Political Parties and Politics. No, Mr. Fishman was not asked to teach a college course on politics to KCOP employees, but rather teached a college course over the air on Channel 13. As strange as the offer seemed, Mr. Fishman said yes. It helped that during the summer of 1960, the Democratic National Convention was being held in L.A. at the Sports Arena because Mr. Fishman was able to get some speakers for his class, like John F. Kennedy. In a 2006 interview with Broadcasting and Cable magazine, Mr. Fishman recalled the first words he said on his KCOP college course. "Good afternoon. I'm Professor Hal Fishman, and this course is certainly quite unique for me because it's the first time I have ever taught where the student can turn the professor off." Mr. Fishman did so well that he was asked to stay at KCOP and provide political commentary. During his time at KCOP, he went to the Berlin Wall, where he directed and hosted a documentary special on that infamous Cold War front. It would be 1965 that would take Mr. Fishman to KTLA, and in August of 65, Fishman contributed to KTLA's Emmy and Peabody Award-winning coverage of the Watts riots. It would be the first of many awards brought to KTLA by way of Mr. Fishman. When KTLA broke into its regular programming and Hal Fishman was at the helm, it was not unlike Walter Cronkite being at the anchor desk during a special report on the network. In the early 1970s, Mr. Fishman made stops at KHJ-TV and KTTV, but returned to KTLA in 1965, where he remained the main evening anchor at what soon would be called the News at 10. And finally, number one, Stan Chambers.
Officers came running out of there shortly after their arrival. The ambulance came. The officer was treated at the scene. And at the moment, there's a perimeter around here, a perimeter around the entire area.
What can be said of Stan Chambers that has not already been said? As one person at KTLA put it best, Stan Chambers seemed to be immortal and always on KTLA. Stan Chambers was there, and it is truly amazing to think somebody was there at the birth of modern television and literally saw it all. Chambers had been there for some of Southern California's biggest and best events.
He was there at the very birth of breaking news, the nonstop coverage of Kathy Fiscus in 1949, which really revolutionized television. He was there live at the unveiling of the Eye in the Sky helicopter, a piece of broadcast news equipment that no station in L.A. or elsewhere in the country can now live without. He rode in the Tournament of Roses parade and was there atop Mount Wilson to press the button, changing KTLA over from analog television to high-definition TV. A whole book can be written about Mr. Chambers' work and legacy, and that is just what he did. It is highly recommended that you check out Mr. Chambers' book, News at 10. For somebody to be on television continuously from the late 1940s until 2010, especially in L.A. television, is more than impressive. Of course, Stan Chambers will forever be in a class entirely of his own. While these voices and faces are now gone, let us take a moment and be glad of the time we had with them. It may be hard to believe, but as we look back into the past, in this new era of media, many wonder if in the future there will be more Southern California broadcast legends to be made. Sure, technology has changed, but there is no reason to think that they cannot be made. And we look forward to hearing from them, no matter how their message is delivered. This has been 9 Southern California Voices We Will Never Hear Again. It was written by Jason Rosenthal and appeared in his blog, The Southern Californian, on Thursday, February 19, 2015. From Dallas, Texas, I'm Wally Warrow for the DX Audio Service.
This article appeared in the Worcester Telegram and Gazette staff on Sunday, March 8th. Ahoy! Feds are after Scofflaw Pirate Radio Station. What do you know about pirate radio? Just the name has a ring of the outlaw to it, of someone commandeering a broadcast channel to play the type of music that he or she cannot find on corporate radio. There's a local businessman who has operated a pirate radio station in Worcester since at least 2009. His name is Leroy Simon Jr., and he is the owner and operator of Flava 105.5, a pirate radio station on the FM dial in Worcester. Flava is described on its website, www.flava105.com, as one of the first urban stations in the area with its large variety of reggae, soca, hip-hop, and R&B. Most radio listeners can only hear it in Worcester and perhaps a few adjoining towns. Its antenna power is very low. The Worcester Telegram and Gazette had to look up soca. Wikipedia says it stands for Soul of Calypso, a genre of Caribbean music. In another part of its description, Flava says it also plays dancehall music, which Wikipedia says is a genre of Jamaican music. Pirate radio stations do not have broadcast licenses from the Federal Communications Commission. They typically set up their antennas and use a spot on the dial that is not in use by another station. From somewhere in Worcester, its address is not on the website, Flava plays a combination of taped and live DJ-hosted music. The DJs take calls from the public. They play advertisements for local businesses. They also promote live DJ-performed shows in local clubs. This has been a source of conflict in the past, as some neighborhood activists in Maine South have complained about the large, noisy crowds at Flava-sponsored shows. 3 times, Mr. Simon has been ordered by agents of the Federal Communications Commission to shut down. 3 times, he has ignored the order. In 2009, Mr. Simon received an official notice of unlicensed operation from the Boston office of the FCC. He was illegally operating a radio station from a private home at 4 Camisa Terrace in Worcester. In 2010, Mr. Simon received another FCC warning, this time notifying him that a transmitter located in the Osgood Bradley building on Grafton Street was operating illegally. Unlicensed operation of this radio station must be discontinued immediately, the notice stated. You have 10 days from the date of this notice to respond with any evidence that you have authority to operate granted by the FCC. It continued, you are hereby warned that operation of radio transmitting equipment without a valid radio station authorization constitutes a violation of the federal laws cited above and could subject the operator to severe penalties, including, but not limited to, substantial monetary fines, in rem arrest action against the offending radio equipment, and criminal sanctions, including imprisonment. At the time, the Worcester Telegram and Gazette wrote a story about Mr. Simon and his radio station. He stated the radio station was not operating and that he was only in charge of the website. But the radio station was clearly still on the air. In 2013, the Boston office of the FCC visited Mr. Simon again, issuing another warning. That warning was a paper warning, an FCC spokeswoman told me, meaning that it is not posted on the agency's website. The FCC spokeswoman told the Worcester Telegram and Gazette in an email that 105.5 was shut down at that time. But Flava 105.5 is not out of business, and Mr. Simon has apparently ignored the federal warning for the third time. It seems these warnings are not taking hold. It's not like Flava 105.5 is the only pirate radio station in Worcester, nor is it the only Worcester station to receive a warning. According to FCC records that are kept on the agency's website, www.fcc.gov, under Field Notices. In November 2014, a radio station operating at FM 104.3 in a building on James Street was issued two warnings to two different owners, Herb Ingram and Alfred Mensa. It does not appear that 104.3 is still operating. In 2012, Daniel Monte was issued with a notice of unlicensed operation for FM 89.9 for a radio station that he was operating out of 177 Grafton Street. In 2011, Thaddeus Kienkienheni was also issued a notice for operating a pirate radio station at FM 102.9 out of a building at 70 Webster Street. In a 2010 story on pirate radio stations, the Worcester Telegram and Gazette reported that the FCC had issued warnings to two other stations in Worcester. Why doesn't Mr. Simon get a broadcast license from the FCC? Well, first, they are expensive. Second, he would likely have to give up the 105.5 location, as it's too close to FM WROR 105.7, which operates out of Boston but can be heard in Worcester. In fact, WROR might be the real victim here, as its signal could get blurred with Flava's. Mr. Simon did not return calls or emails to the Worcester Telegram and Gazette regarding Flava 105.5. I presume that when the newspaper reaches him, he would tell us that the radio station is out of business. But if you live in Worcester, you can hear it for yourself that it's still playing in the face of fines, equipment seizure, and possible imprisonment. Mr. Simon is impressive for his brazenness, if nothing else. For the DX Audio Service, this is Phil Wayne.
Why your dad's 30-year-old stereo system sounds better than your new one. This article is by Adrian Covert in Gizmo Magazine. If you fashion yourself as an audiophile and just threw down a decent wad of cash on a new AV receiver, you probably won't like hearing that the receivers of yesteryear produce comparable sound. Why is that? Technological advancement, ironically. CNET's Steve Guttenberg sheds light on this interesting development, that over the years, actual sound quality became a secondary selling point, since most people started buying their equipment either online or from big box retailers. People started caring more about the number of connections and wireless interfaces and wattage of systems. As a result, there was less money in R&D budgets to spend on advancements in sound. Okay, so what's wrong with that? The receiver engineers have to devote the lion's share of their design skills and budget to making the features work. Every year, receiver manufacturers pay out more and more money in the form of royalties and licensing fees to Apple, Odyssey, Bluetooth, HD Radio, XM Sirius, Dolby, DTS, and other companies. And those dollars consume an even bigger chunk of the design budget. The engineers have to make do with whatever is left to make the receiver sound good. Retail prices of receivers, the ones that sell in big numbers, never go up. The $300 to $500 models are where most of the sales action is, just like 10, 20, or 30 years ago, when their $300 to $500 models weren't packed to the gills with the features I just listed. Something's got to go, and sound quality usually takes the hit. What's more is that over the past few decades, the average power of receivers has gone down in high-end receivers. While the entry-level and mid-range receivers have more watts than before, from 20 watts to 30 watts then, to 90 watts to 100 watts now, high-end receivers top out around 140 watts to 150 watts. Gutenberg references a 270-watt Pioneer receiver from 1980, and a test of that receiver by Innovative Audio shows that it can go toe-to-toe with the newest gear. So if you're solely interested in a receiver for music, going vintage might not be the worst idea. By the way, what are the top 10 most sought-after classic stereo receivers? This list might surprise you as it did me. Vintage stereo receivers are popular items for many people to collect. There is a certain nostalgia involved for some people that cannot compare to anything else. Some other people buy vintage receivers because they need that style to operate their vintage electronics. However, regardless of what the reason is for buying a vintage stereo receiver, it is important to know which ones are considered to be the best. Vintage receivers can be located at garage sales and online at eBay. Buying a vintage receiver that is in the top 10 list is able to give people the peace of mind knowing that these items have already been rated and have been determined to be trustworthy and of good quality. Understanding features that these vintage systems have is also important to ensure that people choose one that best suits their needs. At number 1, the vintage Harman Kardon 430 Twin Stereo Receiver is one name that comes up over and over again, as rated by users as one of the best vintage stereo receivers. This model was manufactured between 1976 and 1977. The receiver features a 25 watt per channel output, which sounds much louder due to the dual mono technology, which ties together two large capacitors with two large transformers per channel. This model is also noted as having superb clarity and detail. At number 2, the vintage Marantz 2245 stereo receiver is another early 1970s model that owners rave about. It has an AM and FM stereo tuner and deep bass, coupled with clear, crisp highs. Some vintage models may have problems with speaker jacks becoming worn and brittle. However, these are easily replaced. This model also has great sound quality. It has a strong, sensitive tuner, so receiving music channels is not a problem for this stereo receiver. In third position is another stereo receiver from the 1970s that has made the top 10 list, the vintage Pioneer SX780. It features 45 watt per channel capability. It has a powerful bass with rich deep tones and good sound quality, as well as various add-on ports coupled with two-channel connections. Other features include stability tuning, a tone defeat option, and a hi-fi amplifier, among other things. It also comes with a phonograph player, which comes in handy for people who have vintage vinyl recordings that they enjoy listening to. Number 4 is the vintage Fisher 500C. This stereo system includes a receiver that is tube-based, which gives the unit a very clear and crisp sound quality. It also features a 35 watt per channel output, and with the great sensitivity it offers, this stereo receiver really delivers. This model also includes dual phono inputs. If people are really looking for a monster stereo system, they will love our number 5 receiver, the Pioneer SX1980, which delivers all they want and more. It boasts 270 watt per channel output, which makes it ahead of many other vintage models. This receiver is very large, weighing in at about 80 pounds. However, it is worth its weight in gold as far as the excellent sound quality it delivers, which is due to the fact that this stereo receiver has 12 FET transistors coupled with a huge transformer and large power capacitors. At number 6 is the vintage Kenwood KRA-5040 stereo receiver. It is another popular model among vintage stereo receiver enthusiasts. Not only does the receiver come with a remote, but it also comes with 4 RCA ports and a headphone jack. This is also an audio-visual receiver with AM and FM band capability. The remote is a handy feature because not only does it operate the stereo receiver, it can also operate all Kenwood electronic devices such as cassette decks or CD players that are connected to it. This model has superb sound quality and also allows the user to copy and record unlimited videos. In the lucky 7 spot is the Sansui 5000X stereo receiver. One of the great things about the vintage Sansui 5000X stereo receiver is that it also is a tuner as well. This model was manufactured between 1969 and 1971 and offers superb sound quality due to the 55 watt per channel output. This is not a particularly small unit as it weighs in at around 35 pounds. When this model first came out, it was rated to be the best by Consumer Reports. It comes with 2 cassette decks, 2 monitors, and also 2 phono outputs, as well as 1 auxiliary input. Number 8 is the JVC RX330VB stereo receiver. This receiver is loaded with features. This digital synthesizer stereo receiver has a 55 watt per channel output and an acoustic expander as well. It comes equipped with 15 different preset scan memory for saving channels, as well as auto memory capability. Additional features include two auxiliary AC units, video 1 and 2 settings, a sound selector, plus many other features. It has superb sound quality, which makes it a favorite among people who enjoy vintage stereo receivers. At number 9 on our hit parade is a vintage Marantz 2230 stereo receiver, which is a very high-quality item that is also high on many people's lists as far as vintage stereo receivers are concerned. Manufactured between the years of 1972 and 1974, this stereo receiver delivers 30 watts per channel. It is noted to have excellent, smooth sound quality. Inputs are controlled via standard RCA jacks. It has an excellent tuner that captures stations very well with great clarity. It comes with a turntable and weighs approximately 32 pounds. And finally, at number 10, the vintage Sherwood RD6108 5.1 stereo receiver has built-in AM and FM tuning and boasts 100 watts per channel. This receiver has excellent sound quality, with digital sound options including hall, stadium, theater, and concert settings. The AM and FM stereo has 30 preset channel options available, and Dolby Digital, DTS decoding, and Dolby Pro Logic 2 come standard with this unit. Additional features include system illumination, a sleep timer, subwoofer preamp output, source memory, and a remote control. So the next time you have an opportunity to check out a garage sale or flea market, keep looking for these classic stereo radios. You won't be sorry. For one final time, I'm Chris Gay in Lexington, Kentucky. Even though the DX Audio Service is discontinued, let's stay in touch. My email address is KU4A. That's the letter K, the letter U, the numeral 4, and the letter A, at Juno, J-U-N-O, .com. My best wishes to all of you for good listening and good DX.
Well, this is the last DX Audio Service. Before we sign off the magazine for the last time, I'd like to say a few things. First, several members expressed some concern and the rumor that I'm tired of doing the DX Audio Service. On the contrary, my desire was to continue with the DX Audio Service for, well, another 10 to 15 years. The closure of the DX Audio Service was not really by my choice. It's safe to say that for the past few years, it's not been a healthy relationship between the National Radio Club Board, myself, and the DX Audio Service. Second, when the DX Audio Service started in 1985, club management was very supportive. Even during the upheaval in 1991, when the chairman of the club was tossed out for inflicting his will over others, we had some support. Today, I can't be that optimistic. Support has turned to apathy and neglect. All this, and more, signaled it was time for me to move on. Third, am I bitter? No. I'm highly disappointed, though. I'm disappointed the board, who is supposed to serve and help members, has divided the club into a them versus us. I'm disappointed that instead of honest, open-mind dialogue, the culture of no way is the standard answer. I'm disappointed of the apathy, which caused us not only to not have a convention last year, but has made it hard for blind members to access the content on EDXN. And I'm disappointed that the losers in this shutdown will be the DX Audio Service members, who just wanted to be a part of this hobby. Now they lose their magazine, and for one selfish reason. I can move on. I have other hobbies and things that I can do. I don't need the National Radio Club to make me happy. But I will miss not bringing you the magazine each month and sharing the hobby with you. I'll miss the information we provided and the satisfaction both myself and the other editors received when members thanked us for a story or a feature. I'll miss our regulars who have been like an extended family, who have been with me from the birth of two kids through their adult years, My Career in TV, and 363 issues plus numerous features. I'll miss you, members, and I'm really sorry that this had to happen. With that, this is the DX Audio Service, signing off for the final time. 73, good DX, and I have every hope we will meet again in the future. Goodbye.